The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of any organization, including One Generation Away.
The freedom of a people to choose its leaders is the root of liberty.
Keep alive this experiment in liberty.
Liberty, in case you've forgotten, is the soul's right to breathe.
Government should be very minimal in protecting liberty.
Peace cannot be purchased at the cost of liberty.
The sturdy ground of liberty.
Liberty once lost is lost forever.
Fight for their liberty and for our security.
Guarantees individual liberty.
This great republic born alone in liberty.
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 Liberty. Just how much do you want liberty?
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner, cutting through the double talk, taking on the topics, going after what the politicians really mean, and making it all clear for your freedom and your liberty. Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Year one of the Donald J. Trump administration is in the books, and it's actually a tale of two presidencies. Welcome back into Liberty Nation. And as Donald Trump hits the one-year mark of his presidency, we'll evaluate the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll preview the 2018 midterm elections and evaluate the increasingly crowded field of Democrats posturing to run against Donald Trump in 2020, as we're joined by Graham Noble, political correspondent for LibertyNation.com. And we'll welcome in LibertyNation.com legal affairs editor Scott Cosenza for Talking Liberty.
Say what? Say what? Say what? One more time.
But we gotta start things off with Say What, where we unveil some of the most wacky, astonishing, and damnable things uttered by politicians and the chattering class. And this was a week when Donald Trump handed out his highly anticipated first annual fake news awards, not for people or organizations, but for their individual stories. Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist and opinion writer for the New York Times, was the rightful recipient of the grand prize for his screed the day after Trump was elected, predicting economic Armageddon, which, of course, is the opposite of what's happened. CNN, the most trusted name in news, led the way with four entries, and let's face it, there could have been dozens more. But even more fascinating was the continuing meltdown of a never-Trump guy who's been utterly repudiated by his home state voters in Arizona to the point he won't even seek re-election as an incumbent. And this week, the lame duck Senator Jeff Flake played the part of defender of freedom of the press in attacking those fake news awards with his own Flake News by going on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos and comparing Trump to an infamous Soviet tyrant.
When you reflexively refer to the press as the enemy of the people or fake news, that has real damage. And I noted how bad it is for a president to take what was popularized by Joseph Stalin, the enemy of the people, to refer to the press. And then now, today, you have authoritarians across the world using the term fake news to justify cracking down on their opposition.
Now, in case you thought Senator Flake might have thought better of comparing Trump to Stalin on national TV, you thought wrong, because one day later, he went on the Senate floor and said exactly the same thing. Maybe Flake somehow thinks he can regain his relevance by carrying the banner for the anti-Trump wing of the party. And he is likely thinking about a primary challenge to the president in 2020. Good luck with that. And good luck to Cory Booker, who took grandstanding to a new low with an Oscar-worthy performance in a Senate committee hearing with one other senator in attendance. Booker expressing his horror at Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen for saying she didn't hear Trump utter the infamous S-hole word.
When ignorance and bigotry is allied with power, it is a dangerous force in our country. Your silence and your amnesia is complicity. I hurt When Dick Durbin called me, I had tears of rage when I heard about his experience in that meeting. And for you not to feel that hurt and that pain and to dismiss some of the questions of my colleagues when tens of millions of Americans are hurting right now because of what they're worried about what happened in the White House, that's unacceptable to me.
Tears of rage. Unacceptable to me. Let me translate that for you. He's auditioning for the 2020 presidential primary. We'll talk with our political correspondent Graham Noble about Booker and some other Democrat hopefuls for 2020 in the next segment. Now, Nancy Pelosi is not going to run for president, but her low-down, dirty attacks on Trump and the Republicans keep her in the limelight, and her fundraising appeal to the hard left alive. This is how Pelosi described all those bonuses and salary hikes by businesses since Republicans passed the tax reform bill.
In terms of the bonus that corporate America received versus the crumbs that they are giving to workers to kind of put the schmooze on is so pathetic. It's so pathetic. I think it's insignificant.
Well, you really have to wonder how that comment will sit with the millions of people who actually value the $1,000 bonuses and higher wages. Later in the week, Pelosi referred to a Republican plan to fund the government for 1 month and including 6 years of funding for the child health insurance plan as a pile of dog poop with a cherry on top that they try to call a chocolate sundae. It really is hard to understand how the Democrats think the same strategy that failed miserably in 2016, sheer class warfare and withering attacks on Trump in a booming economy, no less, are enough for them to win control of the House and maybe the Senate. But they do. They're convinced they've got this one in the bag. And to show you the type of people the hard left base of the Democratic Party is attracting, take a gander at this ominous political ad.
I'm Chelsea Manning, and I approve this message.
We live in trying times. Times of fear. Of suppression. Of hate. We need to actually take the reins of power from them. We need to challenge them at every level. We need to fix this. We don't need them anymore. We can do better.
A former Army officer, a man who became a woman, a trans, who was imprisoned for 7 years, found guilty on 22 counts of leaking classified documents to WikiLeaks, now a Democrat candidate for the Senate in Maryland. Seriously. But in another cooked-up drama that would never happen with any other president, Trump was pronounced in very good health after a physical from White House Dr. Ronnie Jackson. But the eager beavers in the press tried to get the good doctor to give them something so they can claim Trump is cognitively challenged.
There have been some questions as part of your exam. I'm wondering if you talked to the president about this, about the president's mental fitness. He has pushed back on that, calling himself a staple genius. Can you assess the president's mental fitness for office?
Absolutely. We did do a cognitive assessment as part of the exam. And initially, I had no intention of including a cognitive assessment in this exam because, to be honest with you, per all the guidelines that are out there, it's not indicated at this time. I've spent almost every day in the president's presence since when he got into office, and I've seen him every day. I see him sometimes three times a day. The reason that we did the cognitive assessment is plain and simple because the president asked me to do it. The president did exceedingly well on it.
Indeed, Trump scored 30 out of 30 on the cognitive test. But with the dementia angle off the table, leave it to CNN to create yet another fake scandal as TV doctor Sanjay Gupta, without having ever examined Trump, declared the president to be suffering from a serious disease.
Sanjay, correct me if I'm wrong, but you did see some troubling signs when you look at the data.
The president has heart disease. Those numbers qualify him for having heart disease, and it clearly needs a plan to try and prevent some sort of heart problem down the road.
I mean, Trump has heart disease. Never mind what the actual nonpartisan White House physician says. I guess all you can say at this point is that CNN will do or say anything to keep reeling in those anti-Trump viewers, all the while shredding their own credibility as their slogan, the most trusted name in news, becomes a laugh line. But you know, there's a lot happening under the radar, big moves and good news about Trump's policies that go virtually unreported by the establishment media, proving again that the media's sins of omission are actually worse than their sins of commission. One such story that flew under the radar was Kentucky becoming the first state to take advantage of new rules permitting states to add a work requirement for able-bodied Medicaid recipients. Kentucky Governor Steve Bevin said this will make the Medicaid program what it's supposed to be without hurting rightful beneficiaries.
This is good for the individual. It is good for the community. It is good for the workforce. It is good for the economy. It is good for Kentucky, and it's good for America. That's why I'm not worried about it. The very people for whom Medicaid was intended, was created, and has historically been available are going to continue to have full and complete access to everything that they have had. And that isn't going to change one lick.
Imagine that, requiring work from people on the government dole who are able to work. What that will ultimately do is offer more to the people who are actually unable to help themselves, which was the purpose of Medicaid to begin with. Okay, quick break, and then we're back to preview the 2018 midterm elections and the state of play for Democrats lining up around the block to take on Trump in 2020 with Graham Noble, political correspondent for LibertyNation.com.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What we have heard here today has been a political spectacle.
We elect these guys to run the country. They're just not doing their job.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
A booming economy ready to move into an even higher gear after tax reform. A stock market up 42% since Trump was elected. Unemployment the lowest in the century. And yet, Republicans are running way behind in the polls for this year's midterm elections. Here to help sort out this seeming conundrum is Graham Noble, political correspondent for LibertyNation.com, who's going to be tracking these midterm elections all year. And Graham, keeping in mind the slogan memorialized by Bill Clinton, "It's the economy, stupid," and the fact that Democrats have not offered anything more than they did during their historic and embarrassing losses in 2016. How do you account for the Democrats leading Republicans in generic polls by double digits?
Tim, that's perhaps something of a mystery until, of course, one reflects upon the polls for the presidential race back in 2016. Just about every polling organization out there had Hillary. What was the saying that people still laughingly put out there? Hillary up by 10. Hillary's going to win it by 10 points. So I think we're still seeing some of that. I think we're still seeing the fact that a lot of polls historically tend to oversample Democrats. And I still think, as was, I believe, the case during the last presidential election campaign, I think actually there are still a lot of people out there who perhaps would vote for Trump but wouldn't necessarily admit it to a pollster. Mm-hmm. So I really believe that the polls are simply just as wildly inaccurate as they were back then. The Republicans are blowing the Democrats away in terms of fundraising. So I think that tells you a lot more about where the race really is than any polls.
Well, that's an interesting point, because the Democrats are lagging way behind in fundraising, but they seem to be buying into these polls that were all wrong 2 years ago. Do you expect the Democrats to continue just hanging their hats on class warfare and anti-Trump venom all the way to Election Day? Or do you sense they have some actual policy proposals to offer?
No, I don't really see them having any coherent platform that benefits the nation as a whole. I think they will continue to double down. I don't think they learned the lessons of 2016. I think they're going to double down on Trump is literally Hitler.
You've got that wrong, Graham. This week, he's like Stalin. And that was said by another Republican, Jeff Flake, which we played in the last segment. So get your dictators straight, Graham, please.
Right. Yes. It's hard to keep up with them. I mean, you know, by next week, he'll be I don't know who else.
I'm thinking Pol Pot, maybe Mao Zedong.
It's hard to keep up with that.
We're with Graham Noble, political correspondent for LibertyNation.com. And Graham, let's talk 2020. Democrats are lining up seemingly around the block to take a shot at beating Trump in 2 years. If you had to pick a front runner for now among the Democrats, who would you say it is?
It would seem to be a tough one right now. Who knows? I mean, there are so many variables out there. But if I was going to pick a front runner, to be honest, I would have to say that it would probably be, assuming she actually runs, which she probably will, I would say personally that it would be Elizabeth Warren.
Despite her advancing age, I know she'll be well into her 70s when she runs, but let's talk about a couple of senators who've been posturing for a run at the White House. Far-left senators Kamala Harris of California and Cory Booker of New Jersey, who displayed great outrage about the alleged asshole comments by the president in a Senate committee hearing this week. How do you assess the candidacies of those two?
Cory Booker on the left is a very popular character, and one might have said up until a few days ago, quite a charismatic character. As I wrote in a recent article, I actually believe that his outburst at the meeting on Capitol Hill the other day was basically his... I honestly believe it was his Howard Dean moment. I think it was a display of such ridiculously over the top emotion that I think it will come back to haunt him. As for Kamala Harris, I think she's certainly up there as one of the front runners. And I think mostly because she is what I would like to call a WOC, a woman of color. I still think the Democratic Party is so desperate to make sure that they hold on to the female vote, which, of course, you know, they always do. But then again, Trump did actually get, I believe, about 42% of the female vote in the last election. So I think the Democrats are desperate to elect the first female president. Their patronizing view of women in this country means that they believe that most women are more likely to vote for a female candidate, which I don't think is necessarily true. In their identity politics mindset, they think it's necessary. I find it hard to believe that the Democrats will nominate any man.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Graham, and we'll have you back frequently during this year of midterm elections.
Thanks, Tim.
Graham Noble. Go to LibertyNation.com for Graham's ongoing series, Midterm Election Watch, and our special edition of LibertyNation.com running this weekend on the first anniversary of both the Trump presidency and LibertyNation.com. Next up, the first full year of the Donald Trump administration and why it's actually been more like two presidencies. We'll explain.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What we have heard here today has been a political spectacle.
We elect these guys to run the country. They're just not doing their job.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Well, we are now officially 1 year into the administration of Donald J. Trump. And when you tell the tale of this first year of the Trump presidency to your grandchildren one of these days, it won't be easy. It's a tale which will properly be labeled as drama and comedy and horror. It will introduce storylines the likes of which we've never seen before or are likely to ever see again. And when you're finished telling it, you'll be exhausted because it's actually a tale of two presidencies. We'll explain. And you can go to LibertyNation.com for our special edition this weekend, 1 year of Trump and 1 year of Liberty Nation. But as I said, it's like there have really been two presidencies. The first presidency has achieved undeniably stunning results, which are true to Trump's promise to make America great again, and these are ones that benefit the entire nation. The stock market in the midst of a spectacular rise, 42% since Trump was elected, even as his outspoken opponents like Paul Krugman predicted doomsday. Unemployment at its lowest level in the entire century. Black unemployment lower than ever. Soaring consumer confidence. More economic growth than during the entire Obama administration. And tax reform, which will benefit the great bulk of taxpayers and doubtless kick the economy into an even higher gear. But those are just the things that should appeal to all Americans. This first presidency has also delivered a heaping helping of good news for its supporters. Restoration of a conservative majority on the Supreme Court and a replenishment of constitutionalist judges down through the federal system. Massive reduction of the regulatory state. 10 regulations subtracted for every new one added. Strict enforcement of immigration laws and a commensurate decline in new illegal immigrants, even without the wall yet, and with DACA still being negotiated. Withdrawal from an economy-crushing global climate change agreement. Notice to NATO that it's time to put their money where their mouths have always been. Oh, and finally delivering on the promise or hope of three previous presidents to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Surely, you say, such a record would generate soaring approval numbers. But you would be wrong, for that's where we get to the second presidency. The tale of the second presidency is of a president perceived by many to embody all the worst possible character traits. A dangerous, racist, sexist, xenophobic liar and a sexual predator to boot. An unhinged, uninformed, unqualified, unfit chief executive, unrestrained and undisciplined, especially when discussing race and ethnicity. Yet prolific in the art of 140-character ad hominem attacks on almost everyone imaginable, leftists, fellow Republicans, dangerous dictators, media bigwigs, Hollywood celebrities, even NFL players. Willing to play fast and loose with the facts, obstructing justice by firing the man investigating him, and surrounded by bag men willing to collude with a foreign government to steal an election. The subtitle of this second presidency might be Loose Lips Sink Ships. Indeed, there has been a clear pattern with this president. He's consistently taken steps forward with his actions, followed by steps backward with his words. Exhibit A, the hour-long feel-good mini-reality show with congressional leaders televised from the White House last week, followed by the S-hole comment just 2 days later. Now, all of this is ultimately unsurprising because Trump is anything but a smooth, polished politician. And he's governed just as he ran as a candidate. This is the same guy we elected president. So in that sense, it would be surprising to see the voters flip on the guy when he's governing the same way he campaigned, going after the sacred cows of Washington with words and policy, unvarnished, authentic, to be sure, completely outside the box. And like the creature from the Blue Lagoon to the entrenched political class in D.C., which simply cannot understand this guy, it's like he's from some parallel universe. The question of whether his scorched earth style is mostly deliberate strategy or stream of consciousness remains still unclear. But one thing is clear. This bombastic billionaire has come to Washington with a wrecking ball and shaken the nation's capital to its core, with his status as the first true outsider in the White House and with liberal use of Twitter, he has called out the political class and sacrosanct policies. He's touched more than one-third rail of politics because he's not a career politician and he really doesn't care what political correctness dictates. He's going to do it his way and damn the torpedoes. Again, governing the same way he campaigned. The same guy. His refusal to continue America's 25-year-long policy of strategic patience with the North Korean nuclear threat is a textbook example of this. Trump has obliterated the mold into which every president in our lifetime has fit. These two presidencies represent the great divide which separate the left and right like no time since the 1960s, perhaps even since the Civil War. The two sides are receiving entirely different news and narratives, retreating to their ideological safe spaces, reminding me of the lyric from the Simon and Garfunkel song, The Boxer. Remember this one? People hear what they want to hear and disregard the rest. The left and right are living separate lives, like a divorced couple that connects with each other only when they absolutely must. Since Trump's election, the two sides hardly speak to one another. So the tale of this first year of the Trump presidency, and likely the years to follow, depends entirely on who is narrating the story. Do you care more about the results in that first presidency or the personality displayed in the second presidency? Do you value Trump's irreverence for political institutions? Do you take Trump literally or seriously? One thing is for sure, and both sides can agree on this. If you expected this man, who's the same as president as he was as a candidate, to pivot into a more traditional president, you are bound to be disappointed. We will break away for a moment, then return and talk Supreme Court and other issues affecting your liberty with Scott Cosenza, legal affairs correspondent for LibertyNation.com.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
And now it is time to welcome in our old friend and regular contributor and constitutional lawyer and LibertyNation.com legal correspondent and legal affairs editor. He's now so important that he's got two titles. I only have one. Scott Cosenza joining us. Hello, Scott.
I'm sitting taller in my chair for that introduction. Hello, Tim.
I'm intimidated by all those titles.
Yes.
But let's get right to the heart of the matter when we're talking liberty here. Sanctuary cities. Apparently, the Department of Justice is considering subjecting sanctuary city officials to criminal charges?
The Department of Justice at the top levels has reserved comment on that. But we do have statements from both the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen and also the Acting Director of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Thomas Homan. And they have both indicated that they wish to go and arrest mayors and who knows who else, maybe police chiefs and so on and so forth in places where we have these sanctuary city type arrangements or places where they're generally hostile to federal enforcement of the immigration laws in their jurisdictions.
Now, and just in terms of the law, not political considerations,
right,
but the law, are local and state officials required to cooperate with the federal government when it comes to the enforcement of federal law, which is what immigration law is?
Well, generally, Tim, the answer to your question, I think, is no. However, I spent a good bit of time trying to consider what specific laws they would be charged with breaking, because those have not been articulated here. And it's difficult to determine exactly. Now, you could argue, I think, that maybe a conspiracy to violate the federal law, which conspiracy is one of those charges that it's pretty broad, okay?
So broad perhaps, and potentially vague.
Vague
too,
and
right?
broad, yeah. So that may be one thing that they could be charged with breaking. But generally speaking, you know, not cooperating with a federal investigation it's not a crime. So, for instance, there are some crimes that are only federal crimes, and not state crimes, or in some instances, like, for instance, we've talked many times on the show about marijuana prohibition, mm-hmm. and in increasingly number of states, marijuana possession is not a crime. But it is a crime federally. So, for instance, if the federal authorities wanted to make arrests in that regard, it would not be incumbent upon or legally required local police, prosecutors, or any other officials to help federal authorities bring or make those charges. That's not something that we've seen in America. And, you know, I think it's likely to be a pretty huge fail in so many regards if they do proceed with this kind of an
action. Are there any pressure points, though, that the Department of Justice can place on sanctuary city officials, or that the Congress can by withholding funding?
Certainly, Tim. That would require, though, a change in federal law in order to enact those triggers for funding purposes, right? So you want to make funding contingent on...
But reducing funding is the purview of Congress. So,
absolutely.
So reducing funding to an individual
city... Like a parent
city,
to a kid at college is going right. to take it, away it, their...
Precisely.
Yeah,
it really is not that different, is
no,
it?
No, it's not.
For their disobedience.
And in fact, one of the reasons why... it might be a bad idea to have so much contingent on federal funding rather than keep it at the state and local level. But you're 100% right. If you were in power in federal office and you wanted to control this behavior, that would certainly be an easy way to do it, which is to make it contingent, make actual funding contingent on a certification that they are, in fact, compliant or cooperating with federal authorities.
Of course, we know that it would then be challenged in court, would eventually reach the Ninth Circuit,
yes.
otherwise known as the Ninth Circus.
True enough, it would probably come out of California and in the Ninth Circuit. And they would overrule the Trump administration.
Of course.
Because of, right.
I mean, I didn't even bother to say
right,
that because it's so obvious.
Yeah.
All right, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. That was a perfect segue into them ruling that parts of Idaho's ag gag law are unconstitutional. It's basically killing most of Idaho's law against secret farm recordings. Explain, please.
Yeah, so a lot of these animal rights groups, in a very effective tactic, they film the worst practices of agribusiness, farming. You have it, and then show those videos on YouTube and in other places, and it leads people, like any normal person, to think, well, gee, maybe I shouldn't eat a chicken or buy a gallon of milk because of the way these animals are being horribly abused. Now, maybe I'm living in a bubble, but I'm hopeful that level of abuse is a minority of cases of how animals are treated. So in any case, it basically says if you trespass against a ranch— you are somehow more guilty than if you trespass against just a person or an auto plant or any other thing. It's really problematic, I think, in the law for two reasons. Number one, creating a special trespass cause for certain favored figures, mm-hmm. and also treating similarly situated people differently, which is to say you own, you know, you have a business and if somebody trespasses on it, because you're not a farmer or because you are a farmer, that trespass shouldn't be treated differently. It was passed clearly to suppress this dissemination of truthful information that would outrage the public. And I think it's a very good move for the First Amendment and a move against the sort of special interest buying legislation that the court has said that's not an okay law.
One of the things we've witnessed in recent years is the establishment of free speech zones on college campuses, usually postage stamp sized areas where people can stand and exercise their
of room to breathe several miles away from where the action is.
But they exercise their First Amendment rights in that small little plot of land, which, of course, implies that they don't have First Amendment privileges outside of that. And now a California community college might be finding support from the U.S. Attorney General in a complaint.
Well, they have the support of the AG. It's working its way through the courts. The hero here is Mr. Kevin Shaw, who challenged Pierce College's free speech policies in March of last year. And his case is now working its way up through the courts. And looks like we have sort of a partial win. The college has been very aggressive in fighting the case. And to you and me, it may seem abundant that, again, you know, a government college cannot restrict the free speech rights of its attendees out in the open. And this was basically a walkway or quad, and he was handing out copies of the Constitution in Spanish. Hardly...
That's very threatening, Scott.
It is threatening very to these threatening. People, Tim. and their policies included... the school's terms were only available by requesting and obtaining a permit from administrators to get into that free speech area. So it's pretty demonstrable to me that this was a clear violation of the Mr. Pierce's free speech rights. But it's important that these cases do work their ways through the courts. I think this is good that they're fighting because – good that they're fighting. Let me be more specific. I think it's good that the college is bucking and challenging and fighting Mr. Shaw's assertion that he does have those free speech rights. And the reason why, Tim, is I hope we get a very strong appellate court decision out of this case that tells all colleges and administrators that they have to respect the free speech rights of their students. And if not, then those like Mr. Shaw can expect to recover massive damages for having those rights be frustrated.
This also forces the supporters of free speech zones to articulate their position, which is essentially indefensible in a constitutional republic. Agreed. Okay, we had a famous, very famous hate crime hoax that occurred at the University of Virginia, reported by Rolling Stone. Huge settlement made to the victim of that for a completely fabricated story. Now we have another hate crime at the University of Maryland that turns out to be a hoax.
Well, this made national news, Tim. There was a swastika drawn in a bathroom, and it was the front page of the Washington Post and other papers. And the investigation has concluded, and now we find out that it was the work of a former employee of the university. And this factoid did not make the pages of the Washington Post, Tim. That employee is an African-American gentleman.
I'm shocked.
And that also – his name is Terrell DeMonte Alexander. And – Mr. Alexander joins Mr. Ronald Alford, another former Maryland, African American employee of the University of Maryland, who also committed a sort of a hate speech crime on that campus. Now, I can tell you that as a graduate of the University of Maryland system of higher education, they have been hostile to free speech rights, Tim, for over 25 years now. And what they've done is engage in both viewpoint discrimination and discrimination against the speaker. So what they do is, if a white person draws a swastika on a bathroom wall, they throw the book at them and run them out of town on a rail. And if a black person draws a swastika on a bathroom wall, well, it's treated like, you know, he just said...
have been drunk.
Go Eagles or something like that, right? So, and that is totally impermissible. And the other reason why I wanted to bring this to your attention and to the attention of all the listeners, Tim, is that policies are authored and promulgated as a result of these hate crimes when they're reported, if they're actual hate crimes, right? Like, we institute mandatory re-education programs for everybody to – so all the students have to learn how to not be racist and so on and so forth, and that's the least of it. And I think it's important to call these things out when they're a hoax. There was a big case that just came down out of Canada this past week, where an 11-year-old Muslim girl had alleged that an attacker used scissors to cut off her hijab, and that was found to be she made it up for the attention. Mm-hmm. Now, she's 11. She can be forgiven. But the 18 and 52-year-olds that are employed at the University of Maryland cannot be forgiven, and the Maryland system cannot be forgiven for how it treats these crimes, and the mainstream or legacy media can't be forgiven for how they're treating it.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Tim.
Remember that the podcast of this show, Liberty Nation Radio, as well as Liberty Nation's own podcast, The Uprising, are available to you at libertynation.com, where truth is making a comeback. So that's it for this week, but we'll be back at you next week, same time, same station. Till then, this is Tim Donner saying, stand up for liberty. And we'll see you next time on Liberty Nation.